All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. And as usual, I'm talking to you from the Borough of Queens in New York City. This is the 15th day of February, 2022. I do like to remind you, I have a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. We do focus on a lot of very exciting exploration stories. You can sign up for my letter by going to miningstocks.com. And we do like to encourage you to consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling, chenpicks.com. And today we have Michael Oliver with us, and we'd like to have you be aware of his website as well, and that's olivermsa.com. I want to thank each of you for listening to this show and encourage you to send along whatever comments you have about the show to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. Our sponsors for today's show who make this show possible: Novo Resources, El Oro Resources, Hand and Metals, Irving Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, Firefox Gold, and Timberline Resources. Before we get started with today's show, I would just like to pass along a comment from a listener named Steve who suggested that, like Chen, yours truly should name his top five tigers for 2022. Well, actually, John Rubino and I are scheduled to do film a Zoom conversation regarding five advanced stage gold and silver exploration stocks that I consider to be candidates for replicating the same kind of returns that Great Bear shareholders enjoyed when that former sponsor of this show outlined a world-class gold discovery that led Kinross to pay $29 a share for that company. Great Bear was added to my newsletter at 46 cents, actually, back in January of 2018, so many of my subscribers did enjoy some nice profits from that investment. But I'm very excited also now about a number of other gold and silver explorers, some of which are sponsors to this show. And I will be, as I say, I will be revealing them in my revealing them in my newsletter this week. And once the video is available, the interview that John and I do, once that is available, I'll pass it on to a larger audience as well. Suffice it to say that I am very excited about junior exploration stocks, several of them that I cover in my newsletter, some of which are also, as I say, sponsors to this show. I've titled today's show, Owning Ships and Gold to Beat Inflation. Frank Holmes, Dr. Quentin Henning, and Michael Oliver are my guests today. Frank Holmes has long been known for his gold and natural resource funds, all of which are expected to be useful hedges against inflation. And he has recently been involved with the mining of Ethereum and Bitcoin as well. Not only have central bankers triggered massive inflation into the global economy, but government policies have contributed greatly to inflation as well. As always, during the inflationary episodes, there are winners and losers from rising prices. Frank has identified a new industry that appears to be a likely winner, that being the shipping industry. In an effort to ward off fears of climate disaster, laws passed by the United Nations or through the United Nations have caused shipping prices to explode higher, leading to massive profits in that industry. So Frank launched a third ETF under the U.S. Global umbrella, namely the U.S. Global Sea and Sky Cargo ETF. So Frank will explain how laws passed have boosted shipping company profits and why he's bullish on the shipping industry in general. And given his long-term involvement in gold markets, we'll try to see what he has to say about his views on the gold market as well. And time permitting, also, if we do have the time, I want to ask him about his views on the on the inability of cryptocurrency to be used in support of the protesting truck drivers up there in Canada, an interesting story that is still unfolding at this point in time. So those are things we'll talk to Frank about in the second half of today's show. Second segment, Quentin Henning will join me to provide an update on Novo Resources, and we'll ask him what plans the company has to turn things around there, heading, hopefully providing some profitable production in the near term, what in general are the plans for the company going forward. They have been outlaid, they have been outlined to the investors, but we'll get a fresh update from Quentin, hopefully, right after the first commercial break. But right now, I'm happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me once again. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be back.
You know, recently you were somewhat concerned about the downside risks for gold, but if I'm reading you right, a little less so now?
Oh, no. We called off our caution flag a week or so ago. When we broke under 1790, dropped down to 1796 a month ago, that triggered a few things that on monthly momentum, which is what you could call an intermediate time scale. It's not real long term, but it's significant enough to give us a caution flag. So we issued the caution flag, meaning that, you know, if you're over leveraged and antsy, you know, maybe put on some kind of hedge or something. Mm-hmm. But 2 weeks later, I think it was, we pulled that caution flag when it got back. I think it was about 1810 or something like that. We said, now, okay, caution flag, that breakage was not meaningful. The downside follow through was trivial. I think they got to 1780 or something, and then they flipped back up. So it was a false caution flag. Sometimes we have those. But action since then has firmed nicely. Unfortunately, I think what happened yesterday on the upside in gold and silver was caused not by the ongoing drive north, because I think they're both headed north, okay, for good reasons and with solid fundamentals and technicals. But you had a spurt there that I think was based on war news. Mm-hmm. And it's my experience over many decades looking at gold that anytime there's a war story, you know, a Panama Canal crisis or whatever, you know, you want to come up with, anybody who buys gold and silver based on that usually gets slammed. Mm-hmm. These are not good reasons to buy gold. Mm-hmm. It's a monetary metal. It moves primarily due to the sins of central banks, the destruction of money units, et cetera, et cetera, not because of some little headline war news. Yes, war can cause inflation ultimately, but we get inflation regardless of wars. We don't need them, okay? They still print the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you had a lot of vulnerable longs chasing in there, and so they got bagged back down today. But I noticed that gold held at nice levels, silver held at nice levels, and we've got some pending major breakout structures waiting overhead on our momentum charts, on silver especially. And we recently ran a bunch of the indexes like XAU index, GDX ETF, and so forth. And we're getting a mixed picture there of crossing over these breakout levels. We want some consensus. So, and we, the other day, we just ran a couple dozen key gold and silver miners. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, maybe 25% of them have just crossed some numbers that look pretty good. Mm-hmm. But we want greater consensus. And I can tell you this, the numbers you need to achieve are not that far above us. Mm-hmm. Not far above yesterday's high and silver, just over 24. We get some numbers in the below 24.50 that if you can close a week there, you're gone, upside. So we feel pretty good about it. The action has been, the upside action we've seen in the last few weeks has not been based on that kind of news. That was just yesterday that we had that panic buying stuff, and they got paid dues for that. So anyway, the other markets that I think could influence what's going to happen in the fundamental world, the central bank world, is the continued wobbliness of the stock market. It got its legs broken, in my view, in January. I think that probably was the top, but we have not broken, we don't have the consensus yet on the downside. I can say with some confidence, I think NASDAQ 100 is top, but the S&P didn't break its key number yet. Now, it's trading below it right now, but I need to close the month there. So we got 9 trading days left. If we can get some consensus out of the stock market to the downside, and I don't mean for a crash, but the onset of an arduous bear market, that's going to get the attention of the Fed, and it's going to cause some consternation about, you know, how fast do we raise rates, or do we really want to do this to the degree that we've been talking about? I think those variables are out there. There's another market I'm going to throw out there for people to watch. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the one that may be most important about this Russia thing. Mm-hmm. And it would give the Fed an excuse to back off on their so-called fighting inflation talk. Mm-hmm. Watch natural gas. We all know that Russia, it's winter now. You know, next, if they act, they're going to, their real weapon is natural gas. They provide, you know, like 40% of the natural gas that runs Europe. If anything happened to jeopardize that flow, you know, flip the switch, Europe would go down the tank quickly. And the Europeans know that. Now, Biden may be talking tough talk here, but, you know, the Europeans don't particularly want that weapon used. And I think that's really the weapon that Putin's got. This border stuff is I think, like a left jab before the right hook, you know. The right hook is the, I think it's that natural gas. And I'm watching it very carefully. I have a suspicion that before he does anything regarding natural gas, that a lot of his oligarchs around him, close to Putin and himself, might just be buyers of natural gas. It makes sense to me. And natural gas has not been exploding like oil has over the last couple of months. In fact, it's been under pressure. But if all of a sudden we see a change in tone there, where you see natural gas jump a buck or so, and like today, for instance, up sharply while oil's down sharply, be alert to the possibility that at that point Putin might be ready to use a real weapon, which is to say an economic weapon. And if you do anything to jeopardize European economy, that has wave effects globally. It could cause central banks to rethink any talk about tightening rates, et cetera, et cetera. So watch natural gas for that. It may be a good clue about possible change in central bank thinking.
Yeah, it certainly could create some havoc amongst the NATO countries, I would think. And, you know, we've been hearing the Biden administration talking about how important it is to have a unified NATO. And I guess maybe the Europeans might not care about that so much if they're freezing to death. So,
yeah, and their factories are shutting down and running 2 day weeks or something, you know.
Exactly. Well, Michael, what about the T-bonds? You know, we're seeing it cross over the 2% level.
We had a suspicion that they could perform as a alternative again, like gold. In other words, where you get out of the stock market for various reasons and you run a fund, where do you park your money? Well, quite often during periods of consternation, they'll go to long bonds, government bonds. Because they're safe, quote-unquote. That's not been happening. While gold has been firming for the last few months, T-bonds have been going down. So it looks to me like, just maybe, the real alternative to a declining stock market, global economy, et cetera, is not going to be to own T-bonds. They're going to reflect the inflation that the central banks create. But it leaves gold and silver as the alternative.
Well, that could be the day when the yellow metal starts to really shine then, I guess.
And if T-bonds don't work, then what else are you going to do? You know, you don't want to be in the stock market. You need to shift to some other asset category. Well, that could be the answer.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep watching and we'll keep reading your letters. You've been very helpful to me, Michael, and I know your subscribers in general have benefited tremendously. You know, this recently, this little bit of nervousness in gold, to have that guidance, been very helpful. And it's olivermsa.com, folks. Go there. Sign up for Michael's letter. If you're a serious investor, I think it's a letter that you, you're probably going to want to own, going to want to subscribe to, because he's just very helpful. At least I find him, from my perspective, to be very helpful. So thanks again, Michael, for being with us.
Thank
and we'll
you,
look
Jay.
To do it again in another couple of weeks. Thank you so much. All right, folks. All right, folks, well, we're going to go to a break now. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me to talk about Novo Resources. We'll get an update on that company, find out how it's doing as it plans its future. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Quentin Henning.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion Wine Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Dr. Quentin Henning with me once again to give us an update on Novo Resources. It's Novo is trading at around, I saw earlier today, Canadian $1.11, giving it a market cap around $273 million, if my arithmetic is correct. NVO is the symbol, NSRPF. I suppose most of you who have been following this company don't need to know that. You know that already. And you've also been very familiar with Dr. Quentin Henning's views on Novo for the last number of years, so it's really good to have him with us again. He is the co-chair, the non-executive co-chairman of the company, so he does keep track of what's going on and no doubt provides his advice on exploration matters for sure and probably a lot of other things. He is also a member of the board. Thanks for joining me, Quentin.
It's a pleasure, Jay. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure, I know, but I know you hardly have time these days to take your breath, so I'm glad you did take a breath and come on with us. I have to ask you this. Novo was having, as was put out in the press, some disappointing production numbers, I think disappointing to the company and to the shareholders for sure. And there was some grade control. It was boiled down, as I understand it, to grade control. And the company was doing I guess part of the solution was to drill more tightly spaced drill pre-production drill holes. Is that helping at all, do you think?
Yes. Look, we're actually just completing a very important phase. We got all of the 10 by 10 holes done in the area that we're looking at mining in the not too distant future. So basically everything that needs to be 10 by 10 drilled so that we have good grade control data, including the fresh rock. This is looking ahead. We now have the assays will take a while to get through, even though we have Chrysos analytic technique in hand. We have a lot of samples too. Okay, we've generated literally tens of thousands of samples here in the past, few months, probably 3 or 4 months, and we see a lot large volume come through every day. I think we'd probably see on the order of 1,000 or 1,000 to 2,000 samples come through a day, but there is a backlog. But we'll get all that data, and that data is absolutely critical, as you say, to grade control and mine planning and so forth going forward. And that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So have you been mining any fresh rock, or is it just oxide so far?
We've all of the rock we've mined, I shouldn't say all of it, I'd say 99% of it is oxidized material, so it's surface stuff. We did get down into the fresh regime Actually, last July, there was a bit of rock. I'll call it transitional. It was, you know, there was still some pyrite and stuff left in it. So that was one period. And then I think around October, November, there was another period where they dipped down into that transitional regime as well. Look, we do know from that trial batch, I think there was like 30,000 tons back in October of fresh material that went through the mill. Recoveries were great. The grades actually were higher in the fresh material, which is a bit of a head scratch. But that's the experience we've had so far.
Yeah. Higher grades might be nice, might be welcomed, I guess. And a little higher cost of mining the fresh stuff, it's deeper down.
Well, it's about stripping at that point, but you got to remember we're kind of progressively stripping anyway, so we've got a lot of that stripping done. Now, when we do get our fresh permit and so forth, we'll have to start laying back in that area, which will mean, you know, a few months of stripping, but, you know, it's all expected. It's all part of the mine plan.
So you've talked a lot about, the company's talked a lot about a very aggressive exploration program. Was that something that sort of cropped up because of lower than expected production coming from initial production, or would have that happened anyway on the same schedule?
We've been kind of chomping at the bit to explore for quite some time. I mean, that's just, you know, to actually put together this entire mining district and now have both the Beaton's Creek area, but also all of this ground out in the what's called Mosquito Creek Basin to the east, all part of one operation is delightful. We do have members of our exploration team who were part of the Millennium story back in the day.
Uh-huh.
So they already have kind of a working knowledge of a lot of that terrain. And we've been able to quickly identify a large number of targets. We've announced news over the past, say, 3 or 4 months now about the work we're doing out in these areas, drilling at Parnell, for example, drilling at this area that we call Genie, which is somewhat north, about 2 kilometers north of the mill complex. But we have a whole laundry list of targets, and we're drilling them one by one. We've announced very good results so far, both from Genie and Parnell. I think these could be large discoveries that basically help us build a further mine planning, add further years to production. They can also be brought in, so there's a little less pressure on Beaton's Creek. You know, it would be nice to reduce somewhat the tonnage that we have to pull out of Beaton's Creek to keep the mill full by bringing in some other tons. And if we do that, like if, let's say Parnell, we're able to prove up a decent resource there, we can look to try to get that into production by, say, year end, maybe early 2023. That would help tremendously. It's just, you know, it's all part of the bigger picture here. But, you know, ultimately it means more gold and more mine life and more ounces.
Did I hear you say by the end of 2023 it would be a sort of a hopeful target date for production from there?
If all the stars align, we got to get the thing drilled out, and we are drilling aggressively. We got to get a resource put together around it. Fortunately, that Parnell block is on, a lot of it is on a granting mining lease, so that takes that aspect away. But you still have to get operational permits. You can't just, you know, go out and start digging rock. The best estimate we have is, you know, late this year, early next year, we would be able to mine in that area.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, initially this was really a conglomerate gold story. I guess it still is to a great extent, but you also are talking about orogenic targets as well, right? Are those any of those very close to the mill?
Yes. Everything that I just talked about.
Orogenic.
Correct. These are lode deposits. So they're basically, steeply dipping zones, maybe a few meters wide, 5-10 meters wide, that can be bulk mined in an open pit. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they are all within driving distance of the mill. We're targeting the areas that would, you know, make a meaningful impact to our production.
So if they're orogenic, they may have deep roots, I suppose, and maybe longer term potential. But right now your focus is on getting higher grade material to the mill close by.
Yeah, correct. Look, the systems are deep-rooted. There's no question. Millennium, when they were there, drilled significant sulfide resources. I think they had on their books like 1.3 million ounces of sulfide resources.
Uh-huh.
So we do definitely have a lot of sulfide material to look at. That'll probably be down the road. I think Kaz and team are working on a sulfide study right now in the background to look at that longer term plan of, you know, what potential is there to develop this sulfide.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to the conglomerates, then you have this issue that's always been a challenge, and that is the nuggety characteristics of the gold bearing material. And part of the solution to that supposedly will be your mechanical sorting. And I know you're testing that right now. How's that going?
You know, it's going very well. We've got an anticipated completion date for the test work in mid to late March. So they're testing different size fractions from different samples from many different properties. We got material from Karratha, of course. We got quite a few samples from there. Samples from Egina, Talga, even I think some from Beaton and so forth. So they're going through all of these samples, crushing, screening, and then sorting the material so that they can put the material through in different size fractions, you know, coarse, medium, fine size fractions. Mm-hmm. And they have to get assays out of all the products that are generated and tailings as well to see how much gold is captured and, you know, how effective the sorter is. Right now, visually, just looking at the products that are generated, sounds like it's going very promisingly. Mm-hmm. It is. It's basically, you know, generating nice low mass concentrates. Mm-hmm. And presumably those concentrates will carry most of the gold that's coming out of these. You know, in fact, the team seems confident now, confident enough to go ahead and decide to deploy the machine out to Karratha after we're done with the test program here at the milling operation. So we got the machine right there next to the mill right now, but soon we will move it out to Karratha to do field testing.
Oh, that'll be exciting. When might we receive some report on the testing sometime soon?
I think once they get all the tests complete in March, they'll give an update, and then it will take a little while to get the assays and so forth from all the fractions, but there'll be quantitative, we'll say, results available within a month or two after that. I think, though, the results from the update, just people be able to see, yeah, these things appear to be working quite well. So,
well, I think that should be a driver for the company, for the shares anyway. I just have to think that if these tests are anything like the earlier smaller scale tests, it will be just amazing. But how much larger are these sorting mechanisms compared to what were used earlier in the bench scale tests?
The sorter that we purchased, the one that we own, is a bit bigger than the machine that we were using, say, last. It was, it's kind of a time warp. What was it? It was actually a year and a half ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that machine was down there in a yard in Perth. It was a relatively small machine, but it could handle. I think the belt was like, I don't know, a meter and a half or so wide. This one can do probably on the order of 50 to 100 tons per hour, depending on the size fraction, the speed that you have to operate it. I think, you know, it's very efficient. It can certainly handle the tonnages we need. And, you know, as you know, with sorters, you can put sorters in series or parallel and increase your throughput.
Mm-hmm. And any idea on the capital costs on those? It's just a rough idea.
Yeah, look, the cost of the sorter we purchased was a little over $1 million Aussie. The price of everything's going up here lately, so, you know.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
Can't guarantee that's going to be the exact same price, but I would say, you know, it should be reasonable. I can't imagine even if it doubles, you know, that's still pretty reasonable.
And I suppose this is these machines are fueled with petroleum, I suppose, or how are they?
You run them with electricity that's produced by a diesel generator.
A diesel generator. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, we're really looking forward to that. I guess those are drivers. You'll have probably, you know, that is the results that come out of the sorter. The mechanical sorter will be something we'll want to watch. And then also ongoing exploration news, I suppose, right?
Yeah, look, the exploration news, you know, and that's where I, like you said at the beginning, where I'm helping mostly. Mm-hmm. It's very, very encouraging. We've got some news coming out over the next few weeks, very encouraging news release about some gold discoveries. Also, this area that we're sandwiched between two companies, Azure and Artemis, in a new play that seems to be developing. That's nickel, copper, and
yeah,
related. We've got the ground next to the Hemi discovery that we're going to drill. We're going to drill those Sinicatoids here in a few months. I think this year is going to be exceptional for our exploration productivity. We're drilling at Malmesbury right now. I think there's a lot of good news coming.
And I guess we'll have to wait on the quarterly reports for the financials and find out how things are going in that regard.
That's right. We'll provide an update of all the production stats in early April.
Mm-hmm.
After we've completed the March quarter. Great.
Excellent. All right, Quentin. Well, thank you so much for being with us and bringing us up to date on Noble Resources. Still one of my favorites. I know it's out of fashion given the share price, but I have faith that somehow you're going to pull this thing together yet, you and your team over there. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Great time. All right, folks. Well, we do have to go to break, but coming right back will be Frank Holmes. He's going to talk about his new ETF that he launched under the U.S. Global umbrella, having to do with the shipping industry. Very interesting story. Frank's finding ways to make money to take advantage of some of the things that are going on these days, and I think you're not going to want to miss what he has to say, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Frank Holmes.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co. Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Frank Holmes with me once again. I think Frank is very well known to most of you, heading up the U.S. Global Investors organization. He's been doing that for quite a while now, since 1989, I believe, is what I'm seeing here on the script. And, of course, he's very well known for a host of different mutual funds going back in those days. But he's also recently picked up some and created some very interesting ETFs. And now just a new one that we want to talk to him about today. It's the U.S. Global Sea and Sky ETF. Trades under the symbol SEA, and I'm seeing it trading here now at about $20.85. Frank, thanks for joining us again.
It's great to be with you, Jay.
It's good to have you, and I think it's also good that we should tell our listeners it's usfunds.com where people should go. You should go there, folks. Take advantage of all the good stuff that's there, and including you can sign up for Frank's weekly missives that he sends out, very informative, keeping up with the market and some key industries. Frank has always been an opportunistic investor. He sees opportunities where a lot of other people don't, and that's why really happy to have him here today to talk about the U.S. Global Sea and Sky ETF that's just started trading in January 20th, I believe, of this year. Frank, I see that the stock, you know, is trading. It's up, I guess, up about 2% or so this morning and now. How many shares are there in this ETF?
Well, it will grow as more money comes into it, Jay.
Yeah, okay.
And I think what's important for investors is that it is a way to play the global supply disruptions that are taking place. Mm-hmm. And there's many factors that were driving these supply restrictions and the huge price inflation. I mean, we're talking about tenfold increases. So what we saw in our research is very, very similar to what took place with jets. What I had noticed back in 2014 was that the airlines industry, because I have U.S. global investors and I'm flying to Africa and Latin America and Asia for all these resource funds and gold, and I noticed that that my options to fly internationally had declined by 30%, and the price of my tickets had doubled. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, someone's making money, and I want to get into the ETF business. So there was no airline ETF. And upon the research, finding out it's like 9% indirectly and directly of the GDP in America. So it's a very significant contributor to the economy. And so that led to a quant approach to creating JETS. Mm-hmm. And JETS was a success out of the box. It quickly went to 40 million, which is your break even level. Mm-hmm. And then it ran up to about 100 and some odd million. And with COVID, it fell down to 40 million. And then it took off, Jay. Mm-hmm. The stock was at 33, fell to 12 when it went from 100 down to 40 million in assets. And the bottom was basically formed just before, well, I guess Buffett was selling all of his shares in the airlines at the end of May. He said he sold everything and it took off. And so Buffett's scenario was quite wrong. But what I'm trying to share with your listeners, I try to look where there's a trend going on, and there was no other product there. It's a big part of the global travel. And I think the other thing was what's called ancillary fees. So yes. The airlines started coming up with all those different types of fees, which irritate all of us, like change your tickets, $200, another bag is $200, and then credit cards, et cetera. Those fees grew from $20 billion to $100 billion before COVID. Wow. Then they fell down to $40 billion, and they're climbing back up again. So we don't have all the change fees back, but in a year from now, you'll probably see a lot of that fee structure coming into the airline industry. So they have pricing power now. The economy's turned. Everyone follows the TSA daily reports of how many people they cleared. And if it's above the 50-day moving average, it means the airlines are making money. And as people, that's just the sort of concept. I still think we've got a little further to go, but I think that the airlines, the JETS ETF in a year from now has a high probability of climbing back to $33, $34 where it started with a couple years ago. But in that journey of creating that, I noticed that in the worst of times, in April 15th,
that the number of people cleared by TSA fell from 2.7 million on April the 15th down to 90,000. And wow. The busiest airport in the world was Alaska. And cargo airlines were making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And then during COVID, all the other airlines started scrambling to get cargo to move masks and gloves and everything else you had to do with fighting COVID. And so the cargo business, what it saw was tremendous pricing power. Mm-hmm. And then there was a policy with the UN on cargo ships. If they have a sort of a higher sulfur content crude oil that comes not from Sweet Texas, but from Venezuela, that those ships are not allowed to go into ports. And uh-huh. that became law, basically started being imposed during COVID. And you have a shortage of ships, mm-hmm. and you have a huge pent-up demand. So what are you seeing now is the shipping industry has the wind hitting its sail, and they have tremendous pricing power. And so I think that the this model is a leading indicator. So if the PMIs are rising, then you can see ships rising. China has still basically been a shutdown except for exporting with robots. But when they turn their economy around, the pricing power from these ships that are out there is going to go through the roof.
Well, what kind of companies are in there then? Are we talking about cargo ships? Are we talking about airline cargo air as well?
We're talking about 70% cargo ships uh-huh. and 30% airlines, cargo airlines. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are Asian names. And you couldn't buy these. You can't go to South Korea and buy some of these names or Taiwan, mm-hmm. these incredible shipping. And their rates have gone up tenfold, Jay. I mean, mm-hmm. they've paid salary bonuses to employees, the working guys on the crew, something like five times their base salary. Wow. That's how much money they've been making. And so what you see is that you can buy for 60 basis points, you can get exposure to these other areas of the world. And with the world starting to go back and sanctions, basically almost you could think of from global travel dropping, I think that the both cargo and the airlines industry have a lot of upside.
Well, in an email that I received from U.S. Global, it included a chart that showed skyrocketing profits, as you're suggesting here, for the world's largest carriers, starting about June of 2020, the chart that I'm looking at. And it says, it's my understanding, as I'm reading one of your articles here, that the United Nations International Maritime Organization imposed limits on the amount of sulfur that these ships can carry in their fuel to 0.5%, and that's down from the previous limit of 3.5%. And it seems as though that was one of the contributing factors as well. Can you talk about that a little bit, what that means to the ships and how the ship owners are responding to that?
Well, what happens is that it takes a long time to build ships, and the cost of rebuilding a new ship with iron prices going up 70%, it's a game changer. Like, it's going to take a lot longer time to get these new retrofitted carbon, I guess a better carbon footprint sea cargo plane, mm-hmm. not planes, I meant ships.
Ship.
So what I think is it does is it shrinks supply. You know, if all of a sudden we're seeing this in the copper world, and you're an expert on mm-hmm. gold and copper and the metals, et cetera, and every time there's a bleep in Chile with a strike and mm-hmm. supply of copper is not coming on, copper goes up. And then we have this huge infrastructure push out of Europe and then out of America. Well, they need a lot of copper, but the mm-hmm. grade of copper is down. So we're seeing a real supply contraction, and that means as the global demand picks up, that copper prices have much more on the upside. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to look at if all of a sudden there's less ships to move cargo around the world, then that gives these cargo ships a lot of pricing power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that means they're going to be on the upside. And to me, it reminds me of the ancillary fees that the airlines uh-huh. started tacking on in 2015 when we launched jets.
But I think the point here was that, you know, various regulatory requirements, or in the case of COVID and all this, that it shuts down a lot of the supply, and therefore the existing carriers, the existing companies that are in business are making out very, very well. But I just thought it was really interesting, this story about the United Nations International Maritime Organization imposing this reduction in sulfur, as I understand it, in the fuels, and that a lot of the – I think I read that it would cost $2 to $6 million to retrofit, or they can put into expensive scrubbers,
right,
and they can continue to use the higher sulfur, and it was cheaper to do that. I guess the scrubbers take, the, in theory, at least take the sulfur out of the air and reduce the pollution. But so as I understand it, most of the shippers then are – most of the shipping companies are opting to put the expensive scrubbers in, and because the cost of the fuel, of this cleaner fuel, was so much greater. Do I have that right?
You have it perfect. It's great, great recapturing of it. So what happens is that these knee-jerk policies for global climate change, you know, from I'm of the opinion that a lot of the policies that have been implemented have been by NGOs and people very sensitive over the environment, and it gets away from engineers implementing. And so what you've seen now out of this whole ESG strategy, that companies had to have this ESG strong footprint, otherwise you shouldn't own them. And mining companies, by the way, as you know, have been doing this for a long time. They just never call it ESG. What's happened in Europe this year is massive energy prices exploding on the upside.
Yep.
Because they shut down all the nuclear reactors in Germany. They made a bunch of emotional. They never planned out this idea of replacing carbon in a very thoughtful process, because it was emotionally driven by a bunch of political people. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the UN strategy is the same thing. But this creates opportunity. And now Europe is coming out. The EU wants to change the definition of ESG, that natural gas is okay, and so is nuclear. Because if they don't have natural gas from Russia, they've got a huge problem. And if they don't start up their nuclear reactors again, it's going to be a huge crisis going forward. And I think that these unexpected consequences of bad decisions show up. There are opportunities for investors. And I think that C is one of those that we're seeing these supply line disruptions around the world. They are even more exposed after COVID and the pent-up demand starts coming back. But wait till China finally stops all their domestic lockdowns and they open up their economy. You're going to see another massive wave of trade and products going all over the world. Now, one of the things we do see is that China has spent much more money on robotics, and there's lots of great, outstanding YouTube videos showing you how they've done with the robotics versus what's happened in California, in Orange County. In that area of the country is still much more manual labor than it is the use of robots to quickly take these containers off these ships and putting them on trains and trucks and move them across America. So that's not going to happen overnight. And so I think we're going to have to live with part of this supply side inflation.
Right. Which sure would seem so. So what I guess one question I'd have for you is, how long do you think these conditions will persist for the shipping industry?
3 to 5 years. I think they have the wind at their sail for big profits over the next 3 to 5 years. And then they're going to be trying to come up with new ships that are going to have less sulfur. So all those new ships are going to, A, cost a lot more. They're going to have to pass it on in pricing out what they're going to ship. They can't do it at a loss. And so you're going to see, I believe, the cost of cars go up. Like, we've seen used cars go up 25%.
Crazy. Yeah.
Right. And so that basically allows tremendous pricing power for new cars coming out. and the higher metal prices.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what's so special about this particular product is it's the only way to play. There's another ETF out there that lets you play the forward cargo cost, but it's a futures type of product. It's a forward mm-hmm. product, but it's 160 basis points, or sorry, 180 basis points. It's much higher. And here you're buying real companies. So it's very hard to go buy Zim Integrated Shipping Services, or if you want to go and buy, which comes out of Israel,
mm-hmm.
If you want to go to buy Orient Overseas International, which is Chinese, Costco Shipping, which is also Chinese. These are big companies. Nippon is Japan. It's basically cost prohibitive for the retail investor or registered mm-hmm. investment advisor to be able to get exposure for such a low cost. And we're doing it just like we did Jets and GoAU. It's a quant mm-hmm. approach to picking these particular companies.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest holding is going to be not actually the Danish, the Mesarec is the biggest holding we have.
Mm-hmm. So these are companies that you can't necessarily buy shares of on the public markets, some of these shipping companies, right?
A lot of them, yes. You cannot buy. It's next to impossible mm-hmm. unless you want to stay up late at night and you have a special account and all this stuff mm-hmm. to buy in Taiwan, to buy in South Korea and China. But the U.S. company would be like Matson mm-hmm. Is a U.S. company that almost 4% of the fund is in the U.S., from that one particular holding, but a lot of them are foreign.
Mm-hmm.
Kuhn and Nagel is Swiss, but a lot of names you've not heard. So I think it's a great way to play the demand for commodities.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bullish on copper, you're bullish on iron ore, mm-hmm. and you believe that the vaccine has basically protected a lot of people, the world is now going to open up all of its borders. That means there's going to be great demand for jets and for cargo.
Mm-hmm. Frank, I was just doing a little research in preparation for our discussion here, and if I have this right, it seems as though that C is selling below its net asset value. Do I have that right?
It all depends whether its NAV is.
I mean, at
the spread.
TD, it suggested that it might be quite a bargain if I understand this right.
So yeah.
22% discount to net asset value, which means, you know, if you buy C, the intrinsic value or the value of the shares, the assets that C owns is below, is much higher than what you're paying for it. I don't know if I have that right or not.
I never really looked at it, you know,
that way.
I think the ETF is much more efficient. The only thing you might get a discount is because of spread between the bid and the ask.
Mm-hmm.
And we had those volatile days in launching this. But I think that this is another way. What our research has shown is it highly correlated to PMI. It's a 6-month leading indicator. And now the threat of rising interest rates here and slowing down the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the Federal Reserve raising interest rates to 8% to get to a positive rate of return.
Oh, how could they? I mean, they're having trouble at 2% on the 10-year.
So we're going to live with negative interest rates, and if you can borrow for 2% to buy a car, do it, because the metal prices are going to trade higher. And we're in an election year. So I'm not as bearish as a lot of people are talking, because I think this MMT is gone beyond that. They have to maintain it. Otherwise, they create such a liquidity crisis. So I think that once you see China turn the corner, that we're going to live in a new paradigm of what we're seeing today, that the market sells off in anticipation of rates rising, but the rates are never going to rise to the degree that they did in 1980 when Paul Volcker came in and took them 600 basis points above the CPI number to stop inflation. This would just be a huge, especially in a gubernatorial election year. That would be a major disaster. So I'm going to bet be more optimistic about the capital markets. And I think that this particular product is, when it turns, it's going to be ferocious, because some of these cargo ships can double and triple.
So we have to, I guess you're betting on an inflationary world then, one in which you have to find ways to protect yourself. Ships would seem to be one, at least for the next 3 to 5 years. I guess gold. And what about your GOAU? How is that performing?
I love it. ETF. I'm biased. But Jay,
of course you are.
But Jay, it's done what it was going to do, Jay. It's outperformed the GDXJ.
Mm-hmm.
It's done a great job on a risk analysis. It's less expensive, and it's just, I'm really proud that it's executed the way it would. And here's the big amount of FUD that's out there, is that gold was down last year. You know, mm-hmm. In fact, gold was not down. The average price that gold miners received was actually up $50 from the previous year.
Is that right?
But from the opening date of January of 21 to the end of December 21, gold was down 5%. The average price was up $50.
Interesting.
So 60% of the companies are throwing off free cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And their free cash flow yields are more attractive than the S&P 500. So gold is like back up the truck. It's just a beautiful asset class with high free cash flow. And we've yet to start to really see, you know, the big mergers to come in. But
yeah.
I think when gold goes through 2200 sometime this year, I think is going to happen. Then you could see gold, the GOAU put on a spectacular run.
Do you think the major mining companies have done a better job this cycle than in the past? It seems like their balance sheets are cleaner. As you say, they're very profitable, many of them. Have they resisted going out and overpaying for deposits? With about 30 seconds left, what are your comments?
No. I think that the boards of directors are much more frugal and disciplined.
Uh-huh.
Deals have been accretive. I think the gold sector is a beautiful industry with much better leadership. The only thing I would recommend is that they hodl their gold. If you have free cash flow, you should bank 10% of your gold because it's too cheap to sell at these prices, is my opinion.
Right. Well, that would make sense. It would make sense to me as a gold bug, that's for sure. Frank, I want to thank you so much. Very interesting stuff you've got going there at US Global. Thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Thank you, Jay. Take care.
All right. You be well.
Bye.
All right, folks. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, I'm going to have a former Soviet Union economist who is now a free market Austrian school economics professor at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. His name is Yuri Maltsev. He's going to be here to talk about how he sees the U.S. economy right now from his perspective, and he's a bit disturbed about what he's finding, and a lot of signs that point back to the country that he fled from years ago. So it should be very interesting to hear from Yuri Maltsev. Also next week, John Rubino joins me, as does Quentin Henning. Once again, Quentin will be talking about SK Mining next week. That's the company's on to a massive VMS discovery in British Columbia. Very exciting story. So I hope you all be back to listen next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.